Hello, I'm Josh.
And I'm Christy, and you're listening to the Dr. Josh and Christy podcast,
where we help you become a family who lives, loves, and leads well.
Today's podcast is brought to you by 22-6 Parenting, an online community designed to help you disciple your kids to live, love, and lead well. Check it out at 226parenting.com.
Welcome back to the podcast. We are super excited to have two dear friends on today, Sissy Goff and David Thomas, and they are counselors here locally in Nashville at Daystar. And I want to begin, they have a brand new book called Are Your Kids on Track? Are My Kids on Track? And I'm thinking about this from my kids' perspective. Christy and I, we have conversation about this a lot in terms of...
Are they okay? Is that
normal? Yeah. Are they speaking okay?
And I think they're behind.
And the book breaks down emotional, social, and spiritual milestones for our kids. And I don't even think, David and I were talking briefly earlier, that we don't even know if we've reached a lot of these milestones as adults.
Yeah.
So, but I want to go ahead and introduce, starting with you, Sissy. Just introduce yourself and also tell us a little bit about Daystar.
So I've been at Daystar Counseling since 1993. Did my master's degree at Vanderbilt and did an internship and just got stuck. I just love it and feel so grateful to get to do this work. I think we both do on a daily basis with kids and families. And I counsel primarily girls from about 5 to 18. And we do a lot of work with parents as well. And we try to come, because we're working primarily with kids, we try to come at it from a really different perspective. Because if anybody who's ever taken their kids to counseling know, I mean, for us as grown-ups to go to counseling, it can feel terrifying. And so we wanted to make it as warm and disarming and safe feeling as possible going into the whole safe house idea. And so our walls are yellow. We have a yellow house. We have a little white picket fence out front, and we have 12 counselors on staff, 3 dogs on staff who are many of our kids' favorite therapists. And we see currently about 1,400 families. And probably my favorite quote ever was a little girl who I had been meeting with walked out of the house, and she looked at her mom and she said, "Mom, you know, I don't go to Daystar for counseling. I just go to talk about my problems." And that's just so much of who we're trying to be with kids and families, that kind of coming alongside. And how do we support them in a way that doesn't feel, we were talking a little bit before about being experts, and it doesn't, we don't want it to feel like that. We want it to feel like coming alongside, and that even writing and speaking and those things come out of this work that we feel so privileged to get to do, and that we sit with them and then get to refer right back to those things that we're learning from kids and families.
And I think if you're a regular listener here on the podcast, like just that whole idea of journeying, that we are humans journeying with other humans, like, and that's what it's all about. How can we become? I loved a number of weeks ago we were interviewing Gabe and Rebecca Lyons, and Gabe Lyons was talking about screen time with his kids, and he used that phrase, teaching our kids to become more human. And I think that's exactly what you're describing here. Is let's reach each other in our humanity, in our brokenness, and our hurts, and let's just hold hands and walk alongside each other in doing that. And that's what I love about Daystar. We were talking briefly as we came in, just that we're, as counselors, we have counselors sitting here today, and we feel like you're our people. Like there's something about
people.
This, like, you know. So David, I want to introduce David, my friend David, and just tell us a little bit about you and your journey in the Daystar and what you do as well.
I will, and we really do feel like your people. We like you both.
We do.
A lot. I have been with Daystar since 1997, so for 20 years, and do very similar work to what Sissy described, except that I work with boys, primarily boys between the ages of 5 and 18. And I do that individually, and then have a group of second and third grade boys that I'm working with right now. And it is a lively, fun Monday afternoon.
Everyone in offices knows when you're working with second and third grade boys.
Maybe even everyone in offices nearby know when that's happening. So really thankful, as Sissy was sharing about the way we do the work, to get to be a part of a place that approaches kids and families in that way. And I think that's so much of why I think we really do feel like you're our people, because even when you were talking a little bit earlier about the safe house concept and four walls and grace and truth, and that is so much the way we want to approach parents all the time. Mm. Just that sense of we're in it with you, and we all need grace. And what does it look like to anchor to truth as we care for the kids we love?
And as we seek to raise kids who love God and love others and really hone in on this next generation of kids. You know, we talk often that we can't change the world, but together we can have an impact for Christ. And as I look at the landscape of family ministry and those helping families, it's just so fun to be able to feel like we got amazing allies here. Yeah. If you haven't checked it out, one of the best places to check out their work is raisingboysandgirls.com. You can see all of their former or books that they've written, all the resources that they have as well. The latest one we're going to talk about today a little bit is Are My Kids on Track? And as I've been reading this book, I've been devouring it. I've been like marking it up. And
that's not an exaggeration at all. We were on a flight recently and I was across the aisle. We had our kids with us and they were actually quiet for a moment. So I think I was trying to take a nap with my eyes closed. It was like blessed time. It was amazing. And Josh kept elbowing me across the aisle like, and he has all this circled and underlined. He's like, read this part. And he just keeps saying, it is that rich. And if you're saying that and you read the stuff all the time, that says a ton.
Super practical.
Yes.
Unbelievably practical for parents. And I want you guys to just, how did this book get birthed? How did it start? What was going on within what you guys were seeing and doing? How did this book start?
I think, both of us would say this book came out of a lot of conversations with parents. And we start the book, the introduction is actually about an exchange I had with a father who was a Harvard-educated doctor. I mean, this man had just knocked it out of the park in terms of being vocationally successful, but ended up in our offices because he had train-wrecked a marriage. His relationship with his kids was really hanging on by a thread. His wife would later tell that a lot of nurses he'd worked with over the years had said, I'm done, I'm going somewhere else, and just done a lot of damage to relationships. And I think we sure see some version, a milder or stronger version of that in our offices, of just parents who didn't hit these milestones and how different we could be as people if we really had a blueprint, a roadmap for what it looks like to progress toward. And we talk a lot about that. These milestones are different. They're not like the physical milestones that we want to see, make sure that a kid is crawling by this age or walking by this age, but something that they're moving toward throughout their lives. And how different I think a lot of us would have been if we had really had a blueprint or a roadmap to begin to move toward those with more intentionality.
Mm-hmm. And I would add too, I mean, I think both of us having done this work over 20 years, even in the last 3 years, I mean, in some ways I'd say in the last 6 months at this point, but in the last 3 years, things have changed more than ever before.
Wow.
Watching what's going on with kids and culturally and in a really concerning way to both of us as counselors. And so it was a combination. I love how David's describing that of kind of how do we name these 12, four emotional, four social, four spiritual milestones that we feel like really are necessary for kids to hit, and they're not hitting anymore with less frequency than ever. And so what can we do differently to help kind of change the course of things for kids?
What's happened in the past 3 years that you've seen that has been part of this change?
We could probably talk about so many different things. One is that anxiety is now considered a childhood epidemic in America today. And that's, we were talking about the leading reason that families are coming in to Daystar, but it's all over the country, all over the world. Anxiety is the primary cause right now, I think, for kids. But I think too, kids are changing and parents are changing. And part of what I think is happening is, like you talked about, I mean, that so many of us weren't parented in the way that we would have picked, bottom line. And so we're parenting reactively. And so we see parents who have kind of, and it's part of the anxiety situation, parents who have kind of swung the opposite. And we talk about parents are either under-attending or over-attending. And it feels like there's a lot of over-attending now where we're almost hyper-tuned to what's going on with kids. And so they are we're just so engaged with them emotionally that we're fixing things for them, that they're not developing resourcefulness because we're so busy being their resources. And so they're not having to learn to work through the anxiety, which any anxiety expert would say, basically to work through anxiety, we just have to do the scary thing. And we have to help kids do that in a place that feels safe. And how do we help them move towards that? And so I think kids are losing that resilience because they're not figuring out how to move through and move forward out of whatever it is that's going on emotionally with them.
It's funny because you talk about the way culture is changing in the past 3 years. And as a dad myself, you know, it's in the back of my brain. Like last night, for instance, our son, he's seeing me up on a ladder cutting limbs out of a tree. And so he wants to get a small little ladder, and he wants to climb up with his little toy tools and say, "Daddy, I'm fixing things too." But my natural instinct is to go, "Man, don't climb up too far, buddy. I don't want you to fall off. I don't want you to." And then thinking, "Man, what would people think if they saw my son up on a ladder reach?" You know, and I'm just like, "But this is boyhood. This is what he's connecting with dad, and he's fixing things, and he's." You know, but yet we're like so paranoid. Like I catch myself, I'm like, oh my gosh, don't fall, right? And it's like, so to your point.
So easy to do, yes. I was with a friend last week who was talking about being confident and what that looks like. And she said, "I remember at the age of 9, I was pouring the gas and mowing my family's lawn." And she said, all of a sudden as we were sitting there, she said, "Why are my kids not mowing my lawn? What am I doing that my kids aren't mowing my lawn?" Yeah. And I got a picture from her this weekend of both of her boys out mowing the lawn. And I thought, good for you.
That's amazing.
That's such a picture of it.
What do you see, David, with boys today? What are some of the struggles you're seeing? We talked about, Sissy's talking about anxiety. What are some things that you're seeing, particularly with boys?
Certainly seeing anxiety with boys as well, and also seeing evidence of boys who can't name what they're feeling, and secondly, can't figure out what to do with that. And so, so many of their emotions show up just as anger. And I think around 9 to 10, a boy instinctively starts to channel a lot of his emotions in that direction naturally, so he isn't any help in getting there on his own. But if he can't name what it is that he feels underneath that, the fear or the sadness or whatever, we have a big problem on our hands. And so I think it's first, that's really where we begin with the milestone of vocabulary, helping boys figure out what is it that I'm feeling and to name that accurately. And we kind of walk parents through how to train kids in that way. And then secondly, figure out what do I do with it. And I talk a lot with boys about how they have a lot of physicality to their emotions. It's why boys are so prone to hitting, biting, kicking, screaming, you know, just melting down in ways that have, you know, kind of a physical component to it. And so we have a blueprint in the book of how to create a space where boys can channel the physicality of that in a constructive way so that they don't become destructive in the process.
That was one of my favorite parts of the book, is seeing that you have a space in your home, you know, to be able to, for your boys just to be able to let loose, you know, punching bags and that kind of thing. And
We've done that in our house because Josh passed me this section of the book. And so Landon, our son, got angry the other day and he threw a chair. Mm-hmm. And when I say threw a chair, it's a small little chair. But he was angry, so he knocked it over and tipped it over. I've never seen him do that. And so we had this conversation that anger is not a bad thing. I understand that you were angry. And at that moment, he was actually justifiably angry. But I said, what we have to do is give you a great place where you can get angry that's not hurting things, that's not disrespecting mommy and daddy's property. So we have these beanbag chairs. So I said, come over here. We're going to punch the beanbag chairs. This is what you can do when you get angry. And so I started punching it. And the look on his face was like sheer, it's got confusion, maybe some terror. Like, why is mom
what is going on with
punching
mommy?
This beanbag chair? And he was kind of timid to do it, but he kind of came over and he patted it a little bit. But I think it was the first conversation anyway. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that, because I mean, he's a young boy, but he's growing into that. I mean, we're seeing that in him, that anger coming out in him in ways that's just different than his sister.
Yeah. One of the, as we talk about the emotional milestones in Are My Kids on Track, you mentioned, Sissy, resourcefulness. And yes, resourcefulness is one of those, giving our kids the resources to be able to manage their own anxiety and that kind of thing. And then you mentioned, David mentioned emotional vocabulary, giving our boys a vocabulary. And you hear us talk a lot about that on the podcast, labeling emotion and being able to talk about, even as adults, talking about our day to our kids and using emotion to do that. Are very important. One of the other ones that we're going to talk about, because we're going to hone in on some of these emotional milestones, The last one that I want to hone in on is the idea of empathy. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I talk often about raising our kids in a culture that's teaching them the value of feeling better trumps the value of loving better. Mm. That when we're, as you guys know, classic addiction, hungry, angry, lonely, tired, and bored.
Right.
Or when we're not feeling good, we're in these negative emotions, let's turn to, and biblically speaking, our idols. Let's turn to the things that calm and soothe us so that we can feel better. And I think a big one of those things today is screens. And I'd love for you guys to just kind of talk a little bit about what you're seeing with that, because I think there's a correlation between, or a connection, I don't want to get research terms here, that there's a direct correlation, but that there's a connection between the screens and anxiety, and even the screens and the inability to process emotion. Would you guys, and especially as we talk about selfies and the narcissism, you know, Gene Twenge's research on narcissism and the connection to screens. If you guys could just speak to that a little bit, building empathy, practical ways that parents listening today could help their kids build empathy.
Well, what you're saying about anxiety makes so much sense. And I talked to a psychiatrist recently. We had a teenager in common who was struggling with pretty severe anxiety, and she talked about screens, and she said, you know, what's happening is, for any of us, when we're looking at our screen, everything is so heightened. I mean, there's so much stimulation, everything's moving so fast, that then when a child or adolescent in particular puts that screen down, they don't know how to calm themselves back down. They don't know how to soothe themselves, and so they stay in this really heightened state that just creates or adds to the anxiety they're already experiencing, and that's building it so much. And I think another piece that we're seeing where anxiety relates to empathy is we talk a lot about how anxiety and attention hurdles often create the exact same symptoms, because whether we have attention deficit disorder or anxiety, we can't be in tune to the social cues that are happening so often, because with anxiety, our brains are spinning so fast just for me to be able to focus on you and read your facial expressions or whatever's going on in terms of social cues. I just can't get there. And so empathy is harder when I can't read somebody else's face or connect in that way. And so to put down the screen and to address those kind of issues feels paramount to helping a child develop empathy.
Could you just speak, because you work with girls, adolescent girls a lot.
Yes.
Adolescent girls and screens, because I know there's research out of Stanford to talk about the identity and the multitasking and that kind of thing.
Yes.
And that, you know, that it impacts girls with middle school and high school girls the most. Can
yes.
you see speak to what you're speaking or see what speak to what you're seeing there in that with that?
I mean, we could talk about that for days.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? I mean, yes, I think the social media piece of it is huge. The selfies, I mean, they are so narcissistic anyway and are so prone to comparing themselves to others. You know, I think about when you and I, Christy, were in middle school and we would be sitting in a classroom and hear about a birthday party. We called them bunking parties in Arkansas, but hear about a sleepover that we weren't invited to. It would hurt our feelings.
Oh, yeah.
But we didn't see 15 pictures of it. As there are now the stories. We didn't see
yes.
it in real time happening along the way. And so a girl whose self-esteem feels so fragile and is so based on the comparison of her peers, I think that just has a profound impact on who she's becoming. And so there starts to develop this split in who I really am versus who I'm presenting on social media. And now there's this whole other, you know, the Finstas that they're calling it, where it's a fake Instagram account. So I have my own Instagram account, but then I have this fake Instagram account that's either it's just for my group of friends where we're just sharing our pictures, or it's for some kind of destructive behavior. And we have kids who have fake Instagram accounts just for cutting themselves, that kind of thing. And so there's this split in them developing as whole little people and in I'm just going to be who God's made me to be, because it becomes so much about the identity they're presenting and that it feels like they're growing up more with an audience than with a community. And so how do we get them back to a place of feeling like they're in the midst of community and developing that kind of wholeness feels like the one of the primary questions with them in the midst of that.
David, I just want to turn to you. Last question here. If you can give us one practical solution for parents to help build empathy with their kids.
I would say we talk a lot about using the things that kids already love, which would be movies and books, and how we can take advantage of hitting pause in a particular scene in a movie we're watching together as a family, or closing the book midway through and saying, what do you think that person's feeling right there? Like, what do you think they're going to do next with that emotion? And again, that's so much how we wanted to format the book, to say to parents, we want to be able to allow you to fold this into the natural rhythm of your family. We're not at all interested in creating additional to-do lists for you. We have plenty to do already, more than we can cover our bases with as parents. And so it's about practical ideas like that of you're already reading books with your kids. You're already likely having family movie nights. And how could we just tweak the knobs a bit to add in some more opportunities along those lines? Mm.
David and Sissy, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We had some technical difficulties today with the mics, and so our interview is cut short a little bit because I'm like longing for more.
I know.
And
can we come back?
Of course. That's exactly what I'm getting ready to say. We are going to have you guys back. This was part one.
Yes.
We're going to have you guys back for part two and part three. And you are our resident therapist.
Yes.
And so we are excited to have you guys back again. So if you want to track with what we're talking about today, Are My Kids on Track is the book, and I cannot recommend it enough. So thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
It's been so fun to be with y'all.
Again, check out raisingboysandgirls.com for more resources and information from Sissy and David. The new book, Are My Kids on Track? We talked today, just to sum this up, we talked today about emotional milestones. This book covers emotional, social, and spiritual milestones, and we're definitely going to have them come back on to talk about social milestones right at the time as school is beginning. So you're going to want to check that episode out as well. We're going to talk about the social ones. Today we talked about the emotional milestones. I'm just going to briefly review those. There are four. We talked about emotional vocabulary, and Christy and I talk about this a lot with our kids, is putting language to our feelings on what we're experiencing throughout the day. Perspective is the other one, and then empathy and resourcefulness. And Sissy and David talked quite a bit about empathy, resourcefulness, emotional vocabulary. We didn't talk too much about perspective today, but those are the four emotional milestones to help our kids. As David talked about, we think about milestones of, are they crawling yet? Are they walking? Are they speaking? But these are milestones that really build character in our kids, and that's what we're excited about with this book, and why we love David and Sissy so much, and what they do is because, as Christy and I, this is our heart. I mean, our hearts are really about helping raise a generation of kids who, as we say, live, love, and lead well, and this is the meat on what that looks like. Yeah. So we are excited to have them. Say that again.
It's the foundation.
It is. It's really the foundation. So check out their work, raisingboysandgirls.com, and we will have them on in part two as we
send the kids back to school.
Send the kids back to school. I also want to end this podcast by saying this is the end of season one. We have had a super fun podcast season. Mm-hmm. Lots of interviews. Lots of great interviews. We learned a ton from other people, talked a lot about things that we're learning as a family, and we hope that you have learned a lot as well. If you know anybody who needs to hear this podcast, please share it, and we also want to encourage you to leave a review. If you're a regular podcast listener, go onto iTunes and leave a review, because that's how it's starting to get in front of other people, and it's gaining quite a bit of traction, and we're super, super excited about that. We're going to start back at the very first week of August, and so we will...
Season two.
We have some really exciting guests coming up in season two.
Do.
We got some great topics, and we just love journeying with you guys and cannot wait to...
Thanks for listening. Continue that's been really... I mean, otherwise this would be just you and I talking to microphones and each other.
That's right.
But it's been really sweet to see...
And we are super, we love getting the feedback from you guys. We love getting just interactions on even Facebook. So you can follow us there at Dr. Josh and Christy on Facebook on our page. And we post these podcast
Instagram.
Episodes there or Instagram.
And I'm in charge of Instagram.
She's the one in charge of Instagram.
Don't forget Instagram.
And so we post them there. Please leave comments. Let us know what you're learning from the podcast, because we love that. We love that interaction. We love that feedback. So interact with us on there. And don't forget to journey with us at 226parenting.com. 226parenting is the discipleship journey that we have been on. So whether we're podcasting or whether we're on Facebook, whatever that looks like, this is the community of parents that we are journeying with on a regular basis to disciple kids who love God and love others. And so if you haven't checked that out yet, please make sure that you do, 226parenting.com. It's a way to journey with us throughout the entire summer as well. So we will be back, season two, beginning of August.
Can't wait.
And until then, we love journeying with you.
For more information and resources, or to connect with us, go to drjoshandchristy.com. We're also on Instagram and Facebook at Dr. Josh and Christy.
Be sure to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Dr. Josh and Christy podcast. Write a review. The more positive reviews we get, the more people learn about it. Tell a friend and be sure to send us ideas, thoughts, and questions you may also want us to cover on the podcast.
It's an honor walking alongside you.
We'll see you next week.